Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Coming up in the second half of today's show, Vanity Fair journalist and author of the just-released novel Peregrine Island, Diane B. Saxton. But first, I'm pleased to welcome author Erin Duffy. She graduated from Georgetown University with a BA in English and worked on Wall Street, which inspired her first novel, Bond Girl. She lives in New York with her husband and children, and this new novel is called Lost Along the Way. And we're going to talk with her right now. Erin Duffy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicki.
Well, it's a pleasure. And I read out that you have a degree in English, because some people might ask, you know, how did you end up on Wall Street? But I instantly thought, what great research material.
And that's what I tell people, right? I did the most thorough research project you could ever ask for, 12 years in finance.
Right, right. And so let's just talk a little bit about your background and how you got into writing in the first place, because you were in the workforce per se. What
yes.
Have you always written? Is it something that's new to you? Well, not new now, but new then.
Yeah, I was an English major in college, as you said, and I always liked, you know, writing and enjoyed it, and it was always something that I was told I was good at, if, you know, you count college professors and high school English teachers and that type of thing. It wasn't anything that I ever really thought I could make a career in, just because I wasn't informed as to how to go about it, right? I mean, writing is sort of its own little world. There's not one sort of track to get on where you can, you know, get into it. And it was all very mysterious to me. And I was sort of like, oh, okay, sure, you know, these teachers say that I'm good at it, but I'm not good enough to write a book. You know, I'm not good enough to actually have anything published. So I sort of put it aside and, you know, went into a career that I knew could pay the bills, like, you know, a lot of college graduates. And it was a wonderful career that I did for many years, you know, almost 12 years total. And then the market crash happened and things changed and the firm I worked for, you know, is no longer. And I sort of sat back and thought about really what I wanted to do with my life and realized that I still love to write and that if I didn't take the chance to do it then, I probably never would. So I sort of switched gears a little bit later on in life.
Yeah, a great example of how adversity can strengthen our character and turn things around for us if we take the opportunity to do that, I think.
Yeah, it's scary. You know, it's certainly scary. It's not an easy thing to do. And I just really, you know, at the time I was single, and I think that helped a little bit because I didn't have, you know, a family relying on me. I was just taking care of myself. And I sort of figured, you know, well, why not? Let's just give it a whirl. And I wrote my first book, and I've been, you know, crazy, crazy lucky. If somebody would have told me that I would have, you know, three books published, I never would have believed them.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that first book, because that was spurred as a result of, you know, the recession and working on Wall Street, et cetera. It's called Bond Girl. And then we'll get into your new book, which is called Lost Along the Way. But I was curious because I read that you you found an agent fairly easily, or you were surprised how easy it was for you to find an agent.
Oh, certainly surprised, yes. Extremely surprised. I had no idea, right? I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea how to go about it. And I basically read different books about how you can get published and how to go about finding an agent and just how the whole process works, because I didn't know anything about it. And I made lists of, you know, I went to Barnes & Noble and pulled other books that I thought were like mine, you know, sort of women's fiction books with younger female protagonists, And I checked in the back because people thank their agents in the back of their books. And I made a list of agents who and agencies, you know, who had published books similar to mine and went home and looked up all their websites and looked up their submission guidelines. You know, I certainly did a fair amount of legwork. And I didn't expect to get the type of response that I did. And more than one, I think there were maybe three or four, came back and were interested in it. And at that point, I was completely overwhelmed, didn't have the first clue what to do. And another writer, the amazingly wonderful Adriana Trigiani, who's a New York Times bestselling author.
Yeah, she's been on the show.
Yeah, so I mean, an absolutely fantastic writer and wonderful person. We had a mutual friend, and I was put in touch with her, and I just reached out and said, you know, what do you think about this? This is kind of where I am, and, you know, I don't know anything. Can you guide me? And she did, and I was able to secure an agent, and I have been published at HarperCollins, and, you know, there's a happily ever after that you certainly don't hear all that often, especially in this world.
Right, right. Exactly. It's one of those stories we love to hear, but it doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. And it's you know, yeah, you have to be careful in a situation like that because you don't want to sound like you're, you know, not appreciative of how lucky you are. And I certainly am. I mean, it's a hard world to break into. It really is. And there's so many people who have so many wonderful things that they've written that they're trying to get out there into the world. And I don't know, some fairy godmother somewhere, you know, tapped me on the shoulder, and I got very, very lucky.
I think it's like a lot of things. You've done the hard work, you've done the sweat, you're prepared, and then it's a case of the right day at the right time at the right person.
Exactly. You know, the work was there, and I had done everything that I could do. Right. I mean, it's not like I just looked up and said, you know, does anybody know an agent? You know,
right.
I had done all the, you know, all the legwork in that way. But you're absolutely right. I mean, so much of it is having, you know, having the ability to be prepared when the opportunity arises. And I definitely was.
I was talking with a listener last week, and we talk with a lot of authors on the show, and many of them do come from New York or the New York area. And he asked me, is it an advantage to live in that area? From your perspective, would you say yes or no?
From my perspective, I would say no, although I certainly think that maybe years ago it was. I mean, everything is done electronically now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everything is submitted through the internet, and you know, face-to-face meetings are still, you know, they're still popular, but they're certainly not mandatory anymore. And I don't know that, you know, geography matters as much anymore as it used to before we have the technology that we have now. I mean, there are so many authors who live, you know, I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
That's one of the wonderful parts about having this job, is that you know, you can live anywhere you want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I work with people from all over the world, so I told him, no, I don't think it is. But
yeah, I don't think so. You know, maybe there are people, you know, who have much longer careers than I do who would have a better perspective on that. But from my point of view, I don't think it matters, no.
So let's talk a little bit about the book. This is your third book, Lost Along the Way. Nothing to do with either of the other two books that you published.
No.
So where did the inspiration for this begin?
You know, it's interesting. I really wanted to do something about the way female friendships evolve over time and how they change as we age and grow. I live in New York, as you said, and I'm lucky. I'm also from this area, and a lot of my friends from growing up, from childhood, still live around here. Some of them have moved away, but you know, you have these certain milestones that you hit as you grow up when you're all together and you think you're going to be best buds forever. You know, you all have graduations, you go to college, you get your first jobs. And then after that, you know, everybody takes on their own timeline. Some people get married younger, get married later, have children, don't have children. You know, careers take them all over the world. And things that you used to take for granted, you know, the closeness of your relationships and The ability to see your friends and really connect with them because you're sort of all in the same place at the same time goes away, and it becomes a lot harder. And I think that's, you know, something especially now, women are busier than ever before. We have, you know, families, kids, jobs, everybody's doing it all, and that's amazing, but it does make it harder to, you know, nurture those friendships that are important to you. And that's kind of where the genesis of this came from.
Right. And you began the book with, well, let's take a quick break, and then I won't have to interrupt you. We can talk more about the book and the characters are in it and the storyline. My guest is Erin Duffy. Her new book is called Lost Along the Way, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I'd build secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I'd do the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Bringing good vibes to the Puget Sound and the world. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live. Before I reintroduce my guest in this segment, I just want to let you know that last week I promised I would give away two books from each of last week's two guests. So that's coming up later in the show today. One was Rethinking Narcissism with Dr. Craig Malkin, and the other, The Whole Detox with Dr. Deanna Minnick. We'll be giving those away later on today. So my guest in this segment is Erin Duffy. She's the author of Lost Along the Way. This is her third novel. And I wanted to talk with you, Erin, about the characters that you developed in the book, because we were saying before the break, it's really about lifelong friendship and the peaks and valleys that those kind of relationships take. You have three main characters in here, Jane, Cara, and Meg, based on anyone you know, or are these totally fictitious characters?
No, they're totally fictitious characters, and they better be, right? Because the last thing I need is any of my girlfriends thinking that I borrowed from their lives to publish a book.
Well, I read a whole book once of a friend of mine. She had a new series come out. She's got many series, but a new series came out, and after I'd read the book, she said, "Did you enjoy it?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Did you like the main character?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "Good, because it was based on you." But I never saw it.
Okay, but you didn't see it, right?
No.
Isn't that funny? And that's probably how it would go, right? If it was about someone, they wouldn't see it. But people that I never, you know, thought about probably
right.
find themselves in it. So, you know, you do the best that you can do, but you can't please everybody, I guess.
That's true. So tell us a little bit about the storyline that goes on with Jay and Kara and Meg. They grow up. They're very, very close. They're convinced, like, you know, many young people, that their friendship is going to last forever. They're never going to have any problems or issues. But things do start to get a little complicated and fairly soon into the book.
They do. And a lot of it has to do, at least initially, with, you know, the path that they each take in their own personal lives, so far as their romantic relationships go. So, you know, one or two of them get married a little bit earlier and sort of start their lives out in the suburbs with their husbands, and the single friend who in this book is Jane feels a little bit left behind, and like she can no longer sort of relate to them on a certain level, and I think that there's some resentment that comes along with that. You know, Meg struggles as her, you know, marriage continues. She starts to struggle with fertility problems, which unfortunately is something that, you know, plenty of people deal with, and that takes a toll on her and on her marriage, and she sort of withdraws from everybody in her life, including her girlfriends. And, you know, again, there's that can create some tension and some resentment there as well. And then the third friend, Kara, is, you know, I think everybody kind of has that person in their life, a friend or just an acquaintance, where you sort of look at them and they just look like they have everything together. You know, they've got the marriage, they've got the career, they've got it all. And behind closed doors, it's a very different scenario where she's being emotionally abused by her husband, who, you know, started off as a good guy and then over the years changed, and she now feels like she's sort of trapped in that nobody understands what her life is really all about. And that's sort of where the initial cracks and fissures, you know, stem from.
Right. There are some very funny laugh out loud moments in the book, though, too. Does that kind of writing come naturally to you? Because it's not everybody that can write funny.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that compliment. You know, it is something that I enjoy, and it's something that I, you know, I'll never say that anything comes easily to me, but I think that my natural sort of rhythm with things is to kind of have, you know, some one-liners or some comic relief, or one thing that I tend to do in all my books is, you know, you have these characters who are complicated and, you know, sometimes make decisions that as a reader you're like, oh, God, you know, and yet what makes them relatable is the ability to sort of laugh at themselves and look at what they're doing and say, you know, I've lost my mind. You know, I really have gone crazy, but by the way, so have you. And that sort of self-reflection is why I think, you know, people can relate to these characters. And it's also a way to sort of lighten, you know, an otherwise sort of heavy topic. You know, mm-hmm. The things that I just mentioned, they're not typically what you would call, you know, beach reading type situations. So the comedy, I think, helps a lot with that.
Yes, definitely. So how do you go about developing such strong individual and flawed, because we love them all the more for their flaws, flawed characters, you know, especially when you've got three who feature very prominently in the book?
Yeah, this is the first time I ever had to do that. This is the first book that I wrote in the third person, which was challenging. And it was the first book that I wrote where there were, you know, three leads. And it was definitely something that I had a hard time with. What I sort of did was I kind of, you know, gave each one of them their own unique issues that they had to deal with. And then I sort of, you know, backtracked and said, all right, well, if this person's going to be dealing with, you know, let's just say Kara's, you know, emotionally abusive marriage, well, what kind of person would stay in this, and why would this become an issue for her friends? And, you know, what sort of personality traits would she have to have and then lose in order, you know, for this to become something that would seem so out of character for her? And then I sort of built, you know, built everything around that. One of the other main characters, Jane, you know, she finds herself in a marriage where her husband is arrested for fraud. And she didn't foresee any of that coming because she was too busy sort of living the high life and got very caught up in that whole world of money and excess and became, you know, a little bit shallow. And, you know, her friends didn't appreciate that and sort of felt like, well, you know what, if this is the type of person you really want to be, then we don't have time for you. There has to be something about her, though, that they would have been friends with to begin with, right? I mean, she has to, at her core, be a good person who just got a little bit lost. And you know, and then I sort of expanded her from there. But it's not easy, and it takes some trial and error, for sure. Sometimes I write, and then things develop on their own that I don't even realize, and then I'll go back and say, oh, yeah, actually, that's a good idea, you know? And I'll go back and amend the character from the beginning.
Right. So it sounds as though your approach to writing is more organic than heavily outlined.
Oh, I have no outlines ever, and it's the worst. It's so bad, and nobody should ever do it, because it is
a lot of
not
people
the right
do.
Way to do things. And I make things harder on myself than they need to be, but it's the only way that it's worked for me. And I'm sort of, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it type
of
thing.
Right.
I wish I could sit down with an outline and know what's going to happen the whole way and how everything is going to evolve. And I never do. Mm. And it creates all kinds of other problems for me. But we get there. We get there in the end, you know. It's just, it's not pretty in the interim.
Well, let's talk about cliches, because this is one of the things that drives me nuts when I'm, there's a couple of things that will make me put a book down, and one of them is when the writer constantly uses cliches. I see it as very lazy writing. British novelist Martin Amis describes cliches as, he says, literature is a war against cliches. And he describes cliches as heard words or heard writing. How do you avoid, or what in you, what creativity do you draw upon to avoid those cliches?
You'll laugh at my answer. My high school English teacher scared the life out of me because she felt the same way. And she hated cliches. And I will never forget, on one of my papers, I had multiple of them. And she wrote in the margin, "This paper makes me want to leave teaching."
Oh,
and that
gosh.
Was it. That was all she got. She didn't grade it, nothing. She just gave it back to me and was basically, you know, said, "This is the worst thing I've ever read." And it was full of cliches. And after that, I became so afraid to use them because of the wrath that I would hear from her that I basically, I tried very hard. I'm sure I'm not 100% successful, but I have tried very hard to just completely get rid of them. Just to show you the importance of having good teachers along the way.
Well, I'm just amazed that you ever wrote again after she said, I don't know that she's a good teacher, but
yes, 11th grade.
She 11th
grade
certainly
was
made
a
an,
rough year.
Certainly made an impression on you, but
yes, it still does. I still think of it to this day. Every time I sit down to write, if I go to write something, I think like, oh, she would not like that, and I take it out.
Oh, my goodness me. I can think of one who said to me, I just love your work. It's just as though you're free thinking and you just ramble and ramble and ramble. I was like, is that an insult? Or yeah, exactly. I don't think it was quite a compliment. So what's next for you? I know you have another book in the works. Can you share anything about that with us right now?
I do. I am working on my next book, which once again does not have an outline, but does have yet another flawed female character. It is about a woman who moves from the Midwest to the East Coast, you know, right after she got married. Her husband was from the East Coast, and she's up and relocates here. And shortly thereafter discovers that her husband is having an affair. And she would like to go back. You know, obviously she thinks, well, I'm going home. That's it. We're going to get divorced. I'm going back home. But they have a child and she can't leave.
Right.
He won't let her go.
Okay.
So it's basically about her trying to put her life back together in a town where she doesn't want to be, where nobody knows her, but everybody knows, you know, her now ex-husband. And that creates some problems for her.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. Going back to this book, Lost Along the Way, I always like to pull up the reader's guidelines, if there are any, because a lot of people have book clubs and a lot of authors put these together. And you have a reader's guide. And so one of the questions on there I'd like to throw back to you, and that is...
All right, I'm ready.
Having children is a major theme in this book, Lost Along the Way. One of the big issues Meg has is that she finds the social pressure to have a baby overwhelming. So do you think that women intentionally put pressure on each other to marry and have kids?
I don't think it's intentional, but I do think it exists. And that's something that I can say, you know, when you asked me earlier if the characters were completely fictitious, and they are, but that's something that I've certainly felt in my own life because I got married a little bit later. I didn't get married until I was 35, but that's late, but, you know, certainly mm-hmm. later. And you know, what happens is people right away say to you, oh, you're getting married. Well, I assume you'll have a baby right away because you're not getting any younger, right? I mean, that type of thinking is common. It just is. And people don't mean to be hurtful and they don't mean to be judgmental, but I think sometimes it can come across that way. You know, how many times have you read a tabloid or talked to someone where they have a baby, you know, poor Kate Middleton, right, has a baby and 3 weeks later it's like, she's pregnant again. You know?
I know.
People always sort of want to know what's next.
That's true. That's true of anything. Whether it's even if it's a job, it's like, well, when's the next promotion? When's the next move? True.
Yeah, and that's just how we kind of are, and it's become very common. And if you were someone who was having a harder time, you know, comments like that when people don't really know what's going on in your private life, you know, could be devastating.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that I certainly. Did pull from myself. I mean, I think I'd been married 1 month and somebody asked me, well, when are you having a baby? And I was like, can I unpack my bags first? You know?
Let's get my feet under the table first, yeah. So the book is called Lost Along the Way. My guest, Erin Duffy. Final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Erin?
I'm sorry?
A final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
I would just like to say thank you, everyone in Seattle, for having me. And if you guys are looking for a nice read to share with your girlfriends, discuss with your book club, I think Lost Along the Way could be an interesting book for you guys to check out.
Super. And your website is erinduffybooks.com, correct?
That is my website, and
okay.
I'm on Facebook and Twitter, Erin Duffy Books, as well.
Great. Thanks so much for being with us, Erin. Appreciate your time today.
Yours too, Vicky. Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
And the book again is called Lost Along the Way. ErinDuffyBooks.com is where you can find out more about Erin. And before we just go to break, we're going to go to break in just 1 minute here. But before we do, I have two books to give away from last week. I promised that we'd be giving away two books from each of last week's guests. Dr. Craig Malkin, Rethinking Narcissism, The Secret to Recognizing and Coping with Narcissists. And Dr. Deanna Minnick, Whole Detox, a 21-day personalized program to break through barriers in every area of your life, where she looked at a holistic approach to detoxing. And I've got two of each book to give away today. So I'm going to give you the number to call in just a moment. When you call, please say which book you're interested in. And I will take the first and the third caller on each book as the winners of the giveaway. Okay, so Rethinking Narcissism, Dr. Craig Malkin, and Whole Detox by Dr. Deanna Minnick. And the number to call is 1-800-495-7617. 1-800-495-7617. Go ahead and call now. And please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Diane Saxton. We'll talk about her new book, Peregrine Island.
Just because I'm losing doesn't mean I'm lost. Doesn't mean I'll stop.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing. Writing it, another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
You found us. Maybe you've been guided to listen. Alternative Talk 1150.
Just wait until the sun wears off.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. So my next guest is Diane Saxton. As a journalist with Vanity Fair and a host of other publications, Diane covered everything from torture victims, psychics and animal rights activists to exotic travel and movie producers. And she's joining us today to talk about her newly released novel. This is her debut novel, Peregrine Island. Diane, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
And so this is your debut novel, Diane, and you've been writing for a long, long time. So let's just look a little bit at what got you into writing in the first place, how you made a career of this, and then we'll go into the book. But so tell us when you first started writing.
Oh, God. I started writing when I was a child, but I studied design and other things in college, and then when I went to work for one of the magazines, I started with ads, and I thought, this is really boring, and asked if I could write for them, and that's how that started.
I've done both, so I get what you mean. So copywriting wasn't your bag, huh?
No, I don't think so.
So, favorite stories, what kind of, you've covered so many different kind of topics, as you'd expect when you write for so many publications, but what kind of topics were your favorites and why?
I think my favorite was psychic phenomena, because I did that and the homeless, those two, I think, were my favorite, because I worked with the Center for Psychical Research in New York. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes.
It's right next to the Dakota where John Lennon was killed.
Right,
which
right.
Doesn't mean, but it was fascinating. I mean, these were professors, Duke professors, that kind of thing, and psychics, and regular people. It's amazing, though, how much they use psychic phenomena in everything.
It is. I read a couple of books on our military, and they even touch on it in the military. So it's amazing how widespread it reaches.
Yeah, exactly. So, And things started happening to me when I was writing it. So.
Oh, really? Do you anything you want to share with us?
Just very strange things, and I backed off. I got kind of scared by it.
Mm.
I mean, I dreamt that somebody, my neighbor, had died the hour he died. And I got up in the morning, and it was the headlines of a paper, the paper.
Wow.
And I hardly knew him. I just, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
It was just kind of, yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
One of the psychics that I interviewed would go into the hospital and help cancer victims. And I called him a couple of years later, and he had died of cancer. So it's just, it's amazing how much of the mind you don't use, brain,
yeah.
And how much could be used, you know, that you think, so anything's possible, I think.
I think so. They do say we use just a very tiny fraction of it. And they also say we all have this intuitive power, if you want to call it that. But so many of us learn to tune it out as children.
Right, exactly.
So I read that you love to write because you love discovering answers. You've written a lot of nonfiction, maybe literary journalism, some would call it. How does writing fiction, or what made you write fiction after writing nonfiction for so long?
sorry, I've got something in my throat.
That's okay. I'm having the same problem today. Lots of little frogs around.
I was interviewing the head of Amnesty International in this country, and I got very close with her. She was in her 80s, and I thought her story, I mean, this was just a couple of articles, and I thought her whole story is just going to disappear as we get farther and farther into the 21st century. So I started looking for elderly people to interview because I thought the same thing would happen. It's amazing, actually, who I found. And I was going to make this into a book of nonfiction, and then thought that some of their relatives might sue me. So I fictionalized it.
Okay.
And I'm trying to finish that right now.
Right. Right. So the book that you've just released is called Peregrine Island. Where did the inspiration for this story come from?
Well, I decided to do something because this one was taking too long, the big one.
Right.
And that's why I wrote this. I love artwork, any kind of art. And I kept looking at this one painting, and it just came to me. The story just started building upon itself. I mean, haven't you been look at a painting in a museum and you think, why would that artist paint this?
Mm-hmm.
Or when or how or where?
Oh, many times, yeah, yeah.
And that's really the impetus for this. why I wrote the book.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, so let's tell listeners a little bit about the book since we've mentioned the art side of things. But Jean Moore, author of Water on the Moon, calls it a rich tale of lust and avarice, love and longing, a beguiling page turner. The story unfolds through the voices of its three related narrators. And of course, there is a grandmother in here. There's her daughter in here, and there's the granddaughter in here. And in each chapter, you actually talk in three different voices in the first person. I'm wondering how difficult that was for you to keep going.
I actually like that because I think it gets into their psyches more. I mean, I'm writing this next book in third person, and I find it more difficult to really get into their personalities,
mm-hmm.
because it's you. I think I have there's a wall kind of between that, and you have to keep. I find that I struggle, and I thought this would be easier to really get into their thought processes. So I hope I did that. I hope I accomplished it.
Yeah, I did. I have read books where this has this been done this way before, and I got a little confused. I did not get at all confused with your book, so obviously it was well done.
But, good. I'm glad.
But it's basically the story of three generations of women. They've inherited a painting they believe was painted by a famous artist, Simon Crandor. And that kind of turns their life upside. They live on this quiet island, quiet existence. And when two art experts come up to appraise that painting, it kind of turns their lives upside down. Tell us a little bit, in your own words, how you developed that story.
I like to, when I write, the person, when I say that there's parts of the brain that aren't used, I think that that's part of it too. I don't know where a lot of this comes from, at least when I write. It's just, the story just comes. It's very strange. It's similar to me to meditation or, but better, because a story comes out of it. I lived on the Sound for a long time, and I...
Long Island Sound. Yeah.
Long Island Sound, right. I'm talking to Seattle. I can't. any water, I think. Any ocean or lake or anywhere you... I think the water is... I had my desk facing the Sound, and I had to put the blinds down because it was too hypnotic. I couldn't work with looking at it. Well, because you can look at it, it's like a heartbeat almost.
I have the same thing. My desk faces the Sound too. It's actually at the side now. I side face it now because...
Oh, really? For the same reason?
Yeah, I would catch myself staring out over the water, which is good for inspiration, but not so good for getting the work done.
Exactly. So the story just came because I think the Sound had a lot to do with it,
mm-hmm.
Because I'd lived there for so long, and we kept having to evacuate, that kind of thing, during storms. It's just a continually changing scene, body of water, I think, especially the ocean. And so that mixed with the art, and I'm very interested in character development and why people do what they do.
Right.
So I think that's a theme that keeps coming up in my work.
Yeah.
So, why people act the way they do.
Right. And that's something that fascinates me. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to expand on that a little bit and talk about how you do develop those characters, because your characters are very strong. My guest is Diane B. Saxton. Her new book is called Peregrine Island, and you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We will be right back.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Anti-Icky Poo, the product that gets the stink out, we cover the world of animals. This Sunday, August 7th, we'll educate the human animal. In the studio, Murali Venkatrayo from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. He's the director of Ananda Yoga Teacher Training and one of the most knowledgeable and inspiring speakers I've ever heard. India, the History of Yoga, and Hatha Yoga 101 from Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 11.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Talk radio for the heart and soul. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Diane B. Saxton. She's a former journalist who wrote for magazines like Vanity Fair. And she's joining us today to talk about her debut novel, Peregrine Island. It's described as the must-read artistic thriller of the summer. Blends love, mystery, and murder. And Diane, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about how you love, you said you love to develop characters. And so I wonder if we could just talk a little bit about how that works for you. Just to give you an example, once when I talked with Terry Brooks, he said he was constantly auditioning characters in his head as though he was in a theater and he was auditioning them, and he'd put them, you know, he'd decide, OK, I like this one, but not for this book. I'm going to put this one away on the side and, until, future reference. I'm wondering how that works for you, because you've got three main characters here. Winter Peregrine, who's the grandmother, and her daughter, Elsie, and then Elsie's daughter, Peta. Is it Peta or Peta?
Either.
Either. Okay. You say tomato, I say or the other way around. You say tomato, I say tomato. All right. Okay. So, Peta. So, how did you go about developing each character? Because, as I said earlier, your chapters are broken down into each one's point of view. So, they talk in their own voice. Was that, tell us how that worked for you.
Terry Brooks, you said? Mm-hmm. I don't do that. This just kind of, as I write, it comes to me. It's very strange. And I think other writers I've spoken to do the same thing, a few of them. Some outline, I don't like to outline because I don't want the end given away.
I love it. I've heard people say that before. I like to be as surprised as the reader by how it ends.
Right. So, and this is great. I do finish it, and then I, of course, edit over and over and over. But the character grows as I write it. And that's interesting to me, too, because the more I get into their thoughts, the more thoughts I find. I don't know where they come from. I really don't. And they just come, they just develop themselves. It's very strange. But again, I think there's a lot of the brain that's not used, and this is fascinating to mm-hmm. me.
Yeah. So let me ask you about truth then, because, you know, in acting, in theater, film, we talk a lot about the truth in character and how, you know, sometimes they'll slip out. And of course, it's the same for characters in books. Since this is such an organic process for you, do you ever find your characters slipping out of truth?
Not often, and that's one of the reasons I like the first person going and changing the point of view.
Right.
Because I get their true and honest thoughts that normally I think a person wouldn't reveal. You know, reflections that are never said out loud. And that I think is fascinating too. I think it's uncomfortable a lot of the time, but I think it's true. I mean, it is the way they think, these people or any people that I'm writing about.
Right, right.
So I think that's really interesting too.
So one of the quotes from the book is, what you see or think you see on Peregrine Island is seldom what it seems. Share a little or hint, give a hint a little about the mystery that's going on throughout the story.
Well, I'll start with the characters there, because what you think about each character is not really who they are. And I think, by the way, I think that that's extremely important in relationships and people. That you think you know somebody and you really don't.
Right.
Or even within families. I think that's magnified 100 times over.
Yes.
With families that people think. No, I think that I'll go back a little bit. I think that people in families, there is always love, but there's always a lot of other feelings that are magnified. What was the question again?
What My mind's just gone blank. I was listening
to what you said, and I'm
blanked out on the question. It'll come to me.
The mystery.
Thank you.
the mystery. The same thing. That everybody thinks that this painting is just a painting, and it's not. I don't want to give away the plot.
No, but suffice to say that it's you know what you think's happening or who you think they are. Think again.
Exactly. Who you think they are and what you think is happening and what you think about that painting.
Right.
Is not what you really think. So.
Right.
That. And I think that's true in life.
I think that's very true. I think that's very true. I've personally thought I've really known people only to be shocked to the high heavens and back
exactly.
to find out I didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. And I think it's even any age this happens. So.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You know, maybe a little bit of mystery is good for us.
Sometimes,
yes. So you've been a journalist for a long time. You've done literary journalism. This is your first novel. I want to, Joan Didion, I'm going to paraphrase something she said. Joan Didion said that it's harder to write novels because you're in the room by yourself for a long time and you're going to be in a bad mood when things don't go well. But in talking with you, that seems as though it works really well for you.
Well, I enjoy it because I procrastinate because I think it's hard, but I enjoy it. Yeah, but she is right. When it doesn't go well, it's not fun. But most of the time it is fun. When it goes well, it's great.
Right.
So,
But
I like it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I think that makes all the difference if you like it. It can still be painful, though. But tell me what discipline means to you. You're somebody who's used to working up against deadlines. What does discipline mean to you?
Well, that's a good question. I think discipline is extremely important, and I find it very, very hard. I work at night because I thought there are no interruptions,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of not great when you have to do things during the day. but that's kind of taking the easy way out almost. Because there are no interruptions, no phone, no people talking, it's just for me, it's much easier. I think without discipline, you don't have much of a life, do you? I mean, how can you go without discipline?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to finish by saying that when I'm working, I work straight through, and then I'm almost obsessive about it, so
okay.
Which is not good. But
that's your natural flow state, right? And there's something about that. Natural flow state, you kind of touched on it earlier, that is, it's very meditative. I find it that way too. And hours and hours and hours can pass and you don't even realize.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. It really is true.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah. So a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Diane?
Well, I hope people enjoy this book. I think you've covered the themes of it pretty much. And what I tried to do with this book, I tried to go carry it from literary to commercial so it wasn't too literary or too commercial.
Right.
And I don't know if I did that, but I hope I did. I think it's a fun read and it's pretty short. So anyway, I hope people enjoy it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being with us today. I know that Catherine Davis, author of Capturing Paris, enjoyed it. She said, I was immediately captivated by the salt-drenched air and nuanced beauty of Peregrine Island. I love books when you can just escape to an island because I am constantly saying I am saving for my island. Diane Saxton, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate
your
time.
Thank you very much, too.
All right, my guest, Diane B. Saxton, her book, Peregrine Island. And you can find out more about Diane at dianebsaxton.com, dianebsaxton.com. I want to thank each of you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with an all-live new show. And actually, it's our anniversary next week, so a big deal. You can send comments, feedback, questions to me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. You can also find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair, which is V-I-C-K-I-S-T-C-L-A-I-R, Vicky St. Clair. And you can find us at conversationslive.net, where we have a ton, over 400 podcasts now. So we look forward to joining you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.